I want to talk for a few minutes about ego, your ego. And to clarify something about it, which I think is really important, your ego is not a mistake. It's not a villain. It didn't happen by chance. You're not here so much to destroy your ego as to allow your ego to serve your journey. The ego is a God-given, universally created event. It could not have formed in any other way than the way it has formed. And in many ways, it's your friend. It's who you are. But as I said in the class this morning, it's temporary. It's your vehicle for functioning in the material manifested world. How else could you function here? You are a massive impression of infinite time and space reduced down into a particular piece that is endowed with all of the cosmic vastness imaginable, and yet has to play a part of an individual. It has to be part of the whole. It is one with the whole. It is not separate on any level from the whole, and yet most of us who find an involvement with our ego personality do not understand, do not grasp that it is one with all there is. And that becomes a real issue because the ego, in its forgetting, which it's programmed to do, in its forgetting, loses its way. It tends to become very self-involved. It's all about me. It's all about I. And it tends to find a way to take over the journey as though it is the centerpiece of all there is. And the ego that gets out of control is a scary thing. We see it all around us. We see it in friends. We see it in politicians. We see it in presidents. We see egos that get completely inflated to the point of obstructing the what is of the universe. And in that regard, it becomes an enemy. It becomes something that really will cause you enormous suffering over time and a great deal of misery. It can also be your friend. It can also be something that serves you. The ego that's disciplined, that gets up every morning and goes to the gym or goes on a run or for a walk, the ego that says no to the second scoop of ice cream, the ego that understands its place, is a great servant to your being. That ego is very beneficial. You need it. It's not going to last long. It will last a lifetime, but trust me, at some point you realize that's not all that long. That ego serves your journey, and either you have evolved an ego or you have disciplined an ego to take that responsibility, or it has taken over and is running amok. And if it's running amok, you probably know it. It gets you in trouble all the time. It says the wrong things. It speaks its mind without having a sense of the mind. It's just endlessly throwing stuff into the atmosphere and seeing what sticks and what happens, and it harms people, including you. And it wants to be loved on some level, egos want to be cherished in some way. They are very self-reflective. They're kind of always looking for approval and people who will give them what they want. And it's very combative with those forces that will not serve it, forces that are obstructing its path into whatever future it has designed for itself. And so when you find yourself in that kind of ego situation, if you are able to be aware of it, and that's a real problem because mostly the ego is not self-aware, meaning aware of itself. The ego is unaware. The ego is aware of its minuscule nature, but not its vast nature. And because of that, it is very inoperative in many ways in the world because it serves something so small that it never has a sense of the big picture, and it gives you a terrible life. It really gets you in trouble pretty much on a regular basis. And if you have one of those egos, you probably are aware of it, but many, many people, of course, have no concept. They just live in the me, mine frustrations of life, and their lives do not materialize in a particularly good way. Not that that materialization isn't part of some vast universal awareness. The universe somehow makes room for terrible egos, and a lot of them, and a lot of them doing combative things and creating hostile environments for people. And you can ask again, why? Why would it be designed that way? And the answer is not easy. But I will tell you, as a writer, and I said this earlier today, what's so amazing is to watch egos learn their way. To watch an ego suddenly become aware of other, of its self-sacrifice, courage, love. You know, love may seem self-satisfying to the individual, but real love is about the other. When you really love another more than yourself, when you would take a bullet for another, jump in front of a car for another, that's love. When it's only love that makes you feel good and then you get rid of it when it doesn't make you feel good or when it gets old and wrinkled, that's not love. That's self-pleasuring. That's something else altogether. Real egoism is not concerned about anybody but itself. So when it has these triumphant moments of caring, love, compassion for another, the exquisite nature of that is so celebrated, so beautiful, so wonderful, the rising up of that energy, and it really is an uprising energy. Somebody who has transcended the lower depths of themselves, the lower self-interest, to become somehow bigger is really so beautiful. And I always reference, whenever I talk about quote-unquote spiritual movies, I talk about Casablanca, and I've done this many times, so you may have heard this, but Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca has left Paris because the woman he loved betrayed him, he thought. And he goes to Casablanca, he opens a bar called Rick's, and of all places in the universe, Ingrid Bergman arrives back right in his life. And their love rekindles, the mistakes of Paris, the things that were misunderstood get resolved. There's this beautiful love in coming together, but she has another man in her life who has a very important role to play in defeating the Third Reich. And at the end of this movie, this man has an opportunity to run away with her or to let her continue with her other man, her husband, in trying to save the world. And Humphrey Bogart has a choice to make, and so does she. And she knows the right thing. The right thing for her is to go with her husband, but she is in love with him, and Humphrey Bogart, and she would give that up. But he recognizes that their problems don't amount to much, to a hill of beans in this world. And he tells her to go with her husband. He gives up the love of his life for something bigger and greater, and your heart breaks. But more than that, as he's walking off into the distance with Claude Rains and talking about the beginning of a beautiful friendship, you celebrate inside, even though you rooted for him to get the girl, which we all do, what you realized is he got something more. He got himself. He found who he was. He found his higher nature. He found his true being. This is a spiritual movie. This is a movie about somebody transcending their limited desires for something bigger than them. That's the journey we are on. Our egos serve us in that, or they don't. If they don't, they make a mess of things, and we've seen that everywhere. And if their ego is focused on the bigger version of itself, from which it has descended, if you will, if it can rise back up into its true nature through whatever process you may discover to let it do that, if that happens, you become the more that you've always been. The bigger self, the more beautiful self, the more expansive self, the courageous, loving self. And that's something we all aspire to in some deep part of our narrative. We want to be that person. You can't always do it in the fictional world or the world of your own life. You can't always find those big moments that give you, you know, a story value. But you find it in little ways. You find it in the kindness that you present to others, in reaching out and giving when you're tired and you don't have the energy and you don't know what to do, in trying to be available to people who need you when you have other things to do, to really finding the self in you that kind of goes beyond the limited self-interest and becomes something bigger. Those little tiny incremental steps are, if you will, spiritually awake. They are driving towards something greater rather than protecting and focused on the minuscule self-involvement. One of the great ways to begin that journey upward, that expansive reaching into something higher, is to repeat this morning's talk, sit still and go in. Enter into the bigness. Enter into the vastness of your own heart. Enter into the massiveness of your awareness. Enter into the power of your navel chakra. Enter into these worlds that allow you to be bigger than you are. And when you enter in and you find the warmth and the embrace and the expansiveness and the beauty and the joy, you see that it's like stepping on, literally, like on an elevator. You step inside and it goes, ooh, you start to go up. There's a rising energy, a rising, expanding energy. So it's not just up, it's like up that way. And it's so powerful, and it's so satisfying, and makes you feel like such a worthy being, that all the ego stuff that you do suddenly seems superfluous and, in a way, self-defeating. The ego has a purpose. It computes things, it measures things, it plans things, it adjusts things, it works out the future, it makes sure that you get on the right road, that you buy the new phone when it comes out, that you it does all these things that you need it to do. It takes care of the day-to-day. Somebody's got to do it. The ego is the thing that does it. But the ego is not there to bring you enlightenment. The ego is there to get out of the way, to understand what its function is and to do it. Just take care of business. And if you give it the opportunity to do that, it will be very effective. It'll be the best planner. It will check out all the hotel prices. It will know everything that needs to get done, you know? But the ego is not there as an ultimate salvation. If you win whatever the Academy Award, the presidency of the United States, the kingdom, if your ego gets everything it wants, here's a problem. It will not be satisfied. And it won't be satisfied for a lot of reasons. And the primary reason is, you know, one, you already got it. Now what? It's not enough. You want more. You know, want to be king of the world instead of president of the United States. You want to be you know, I won one Oscar, and I said, I've got two sons. Who am I going to leave? I can't leave one to one son and not another son. So I got to win another Oscar. And that became a real conflict. I didn't want to win another Oscar. It was too hard to get the first one. And I just, you know, but the ego goes like that. I got to do this. I got to have, and, you know, and be more celebrated. And one of the things you realize, of course, if you become successful because of your ego, is that success requires more achievement. You got to do more. More and more and more, and it gets really tiring. And then you've got to support the image that you've created in yourself, because ego, in many ways, is imagistic. It's a projection of a self. And usually, the ego projects a big self, you know, a prominent self, a well-regarded self, whatever image it has that it wants the world to embrace, it becomes a construct. And then you have to defend that construct. You have to support it, you know. If you're driving a Mercedes and suddenly you have to drive a Ford Escort, something in you is going to feel like a deflated ego. You know, I'm not good as I was before. You know, people are going to see that I'm not the person I was, you know. Or you downsize, you know, the whole downsizing thing that happens in your later life. You know, everybody has to begin to let go of their what I call it, my baronial aspect. You know, you have this thing that wants to be perceived in one way, and then you realize you're going to have to lose that. You know, I mean, not everybody does, but most people do. Most people have to come back down to who they are. Just for example, you retire. You know, I am a school teacher. I am the president of this company. I am the, you name it, you know, the ballerina of this company. At some point, you're not that. So who are you? If you aren't the image you project, who are you? That's a really great question. Because finding out who you are is what this is all about. And as you start to realize that you get rid of the accoutrement, you know, the name, the title, the stuff that projects a self, and you just become you, that's when you start to discover what life is and what you really are in this world. You start to realize you are the thing around which all this stuff takes place that the ego invests in and takes credit for. But the thing itself is relatively empty. Really, what we are at the source, when you go deep inside and discover the self, you start to find, before you understand how vast and extraordinary yourself is, you discover still simplicity and quiet presence. You just are. You just are. Look at a little baby. Look at little babies. They're so amazing. They don't know who they are. They don't have an ego yet. They don't have an identity. They just cry and laugh and smile. And they go, smiling gets me stuff, so I'll smile more. And, you know, and crying gets me stuff, so I'll cry more. They have it worked out very quickly how to use the world. And then it starts to get codified into a personality. And then it becomes problematic. But in the beginning, it's so innocent. It's so simple. They're just a living, breathing being. And in the end, take it all away and you go back to living, breathing being. You're a being. You know, we walk around with so many issues and so many sufferings and so many worries and concerns and dramas, and everything gets our attention and everything sticks to us, and we have Velcro all over our system, and one thought is Velcroed and another person Velcros, and we get stuck. And it's a horrible life. It's a horrible way to spend your time. You just have to go, no, let go, surrender. It goes away. That's the magic of the meditative moment. It falls away. All this stuff that you think is vital and vibrant to your image isn't really important. The thing that's important is the being that underlies that image that really is content, that is really quite beautiful as an entity. This is what's important. And people seem not to get it. We seem to be a world that does nothing but reinforce the ego mind. And of course, if you watch television and you watch commercials and you look at newspapers, all they're doing is building up an ego person, somebody who doesn't have underarm deodorant, somebody who has absolute perfect skin, somebody who has clean breath. This is the person we all fight to be because we're so afraid that people are going to judge us for not being that. And we buy into the system. It's probably a good idea to brush your teeth so they don't fall out. I don't know about deodorant. It's up to you, but I think you really, there are certain regulations that are healthy and nice and allow you to live comfortably in the zone that you live in, but there's an awful lot of that stuff that's pure entrapment. And if you want to be entrapped by the world, it will assist you. If you want to be free of the world, then you have work to do. And what is that work? Sit still. Sit still. Go in. Turn away from the outer manifestation and find the inner. And then when you find this inner space, like I said earlier today, you will begin to see that inner beauty reflected outward. And you won't have to have an ego presenting you to the world, because your true self will be presented to the world. And if you want to see truly beautiful beings, look at people who are true selves. There are some of them out there, the Dalai Lama. You know, I don't know if you've ever watched movies about him or seen him. He is his pure self. He's not walking around going, hey, I'm the Dalai Lama, I can do whatever I want. He doesn't live like that. He lives in a state of loving compassion. There's something so radiant about that, so beautiful. You all know certain people in your life who have that quality where they're not about themselves. They're about something else, something beyond them, that they're quiet, they have a quiet goodness, a kind of simplicity in being, something that is still pointed and attractive. You know people like that. And if you don't know them, be it. Be that person. Why wait to meet somebody like that so they can show you what's possible? I'm telling you right now what's possible. You can be that person. It doesn't take much. It just takes sit still, open your heart, feel that inner glow, and let it reflect itself outward, and it will bounce off of everybody to you. And you will look at people around you, you will go, how did people get so beautiful? How did life get so wonderful? What is it that's happening? You're just seeing a reflection. That's all you're doing. And every one of us, I promise you, is that glow. Every one of you is radiant inside. And your ego blocks that. It obstructs that. So how do you get rid of this ego structure? Well, first of all, I'm not sure you want to get rid of it entirely. Getting rid of it entirely is a false state. In a sense, even the most awakened people, the most enlightened people, still have a body. They still have a mind. They still present themselves to the world. They're not out there, you know, walking around like, oh, I have no existence. I mean, a few of them are, but most of them are really like nice people. They're just nice, good people. And they're good people who have a kind of simple ego as opposed to complex. They're just simple. And the simple ego is something you don't feel threatened by, you don't feel hostile when you're around it. You know, one of the things that I had as a problem with celebrity, which I had for a period of time, is when I would say, Sam would say, so what do you do? And I would go, well, I'm a filmmaker, what have you done? I would say, I did this movie. And if they had heard of it at all, they wouldn't go, oh my God, really? Oh yeah, they would go, whoa, oh, whoa. And their ego would go, whoa. They had to express who they were. They were so frightened or disturbed to be in the presence of somebody with a bigger ego or who they thought had more attainment than they had. And so they had to throw their thing out, and it was always unpleasant, always. It was like, I would rather be nobody. And truly, nowadays, when people say, what do? I say, I'm a grandpa. That works perfectly because it really is true, and it's absolutely satisfying. I'm just a grandpa. I don't need to defend and project and build a story around myself. I couldn't care less. You know, I've taken all of my worldly accomplishments and I've put them in a file cabinet and on a resume, and they're in a drawer. I don't have to walk around being that stuff. I don't require that. You don't require it. Trust me, being the beautiful true nature of what you are is so much more attractive than being a personality that's owning something or pushing an agenda or trying to have stature or trying to have some kind of attainment. It's so boring. And the worst and the most boring is the spiritual people who do that, who walk around with their collars or their robes or their, you know, all these, God knows what they wear, you know, and but to say how spiritual they are, you know, I kind of want to throw up. I really do. I just look at that stuff and go, come on, if you were really that, you wouldn't be wearing these robes, or you would fill them differently. You would fill them with something so simple. The thing I loved about Nityananda, those of you who look at his picture here, he's stark naked. He walked around stark naked, and he didn't have a great Hollywood body. He was a big, heavy-set guy with arthritis. He couldn't care less. I mean, that's almost the extreme. Yes, I mean, you don't want to do that in our culture. But you get the idea. There's nothing you're selling. There's nothing to promote. You're just you, period. And the more you you are, the more you will serve the bigness of yourself rather than the little ego-driven, neurotic person that most of us find ourselves to be. It's an effort to get out of that. It takes a life, a lifetime, a lot of work. One thing I would recommend to anybody who wants to get out of their ego is go to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Write movies. If you want to get crushed on a regular basis, one script after another, crush, 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 until there's nothing left. They just do you in. They rewrite you, they tell you you're great, and then they throw you out, and then they don't give you a job, and then they tell you, I mean, they go on and on with all of this false praise and then, you know, difficulties, one after another after another. But I would venture to say the workplace in general is like that. We're all being crushed. It's okay. Let them crush you. They cannot get rid of you. I don't care how much egoism is destroyed, the being that created that ego is indestructible. It will never go away. It will be there for, I was going to say time immemorial, but beyond time. It just is forever. You are forever. You don't have to swallow that. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to even pay attention to what I'm saying, because when the time comes to know that, you will know it. And if I'm wrong, the only thing that will be left is nothing at all, and that's very relaxing. So you don't have to worry about the ego-minded stuff. You're just free. You're free. But the awakened people that I've known, the enlightened people, they're already free. And what are they free of? Ego. They're not absent ego. They're just free of it. They're free of their attachment to it, their investment in it, their need for it, their hunger for it. They just don't care. Why care? Why walk around as one grain of sand thinking you're important on the beach? You show me one grain of sand that's more important than another grain of sand on the beach. You find it. One that sparkles more or is a tenth of a or a billionth of a millimeter bigger than another grain of sand. You show me a grain of sand that matters more than another, and that'll be amazing. But that's what our egos do. I'm the best grain of sand on the entire beach, and there are billions of beaches, but they got the best beach. You know, there's no better beach. I got the best view. You know? It's really crazy. And all I'm trying to get at is that learning to let that go is the essence of surrender, the essence of letting go. It's so sweet. It's so rewarding on so many levels. The more you let it fall away, every opportunity you have to defend the ego, just go, nope, nope, not necessary. And it will come at you in the good side and the bad side. It will tell you how terrible you are. And a lot of you are very, you know, you don't embrace the good side, but boy, when the bad side comes, you're immediate, oh my God, I'm a terrible person. You know, how did I do that? Oh my God, I'm the worst person ever. That's terrible too. No, you've got to let go of both sides, being the greatest and the worst. You are not one and you're not the other. You're just who and what you are. And trust me, who and what you are is beautiful. And when two beautiful what you are people discover each other, it's the beginning of a wonderful friendship. Because you don't have to promote, you don't have to sell, you don't have to pretend, you don't have to build constructs. You just can be yourself. Easy. Easy. Just be yourself with another human being. What a joy. No contest. It's just simple. And you look at each other and you know the love from one and the love from the other recognizes itself as the same love. It's such a sweet, beautiful construct. And we all have it. We all do. And one of the great things about a meditative class or an environment like this is we can look at the people we barely know in the work, in the day-to-day world, and yet we care about each other already. We all know and care about one another. We have a sense of belonging to the same club on some level, but it's beyond a club because it's universal. And you can see people on the street and you'll recognize them. You'll see them and you'll go, I'm in that club. You know, we're all part, they're open. You see somebody touching somebody walking down the street. It's, last night I sit in this restaurant on 56th Street. I had breakfast there with a big window looking out on the street. And people walk by all the time and I just get melted by the kindnesses that somehow people show one another. How they grab each other's hands, the father touches his son's head. I mean, there's just so many little things that go on and you go, oh, simple, unconscious or conscious expressions of something beautiful, really wonderful about the human condition. And you wanna go out, you wanna hug them. Or, you know, we love our waitress at this restaurant. She's from Poland, but she's the most effective human being I've ever seen. You know, people are looking for what? I don't know, people who can, you know, write books that sell millions of copies or, you know, become a movie star. This woman just knows when you need more coffee. She just knows what is important at any given moment, and she's there for you. And she's so there for you, and she's got all these customers, but you feel special. She is an amazing person. She used to be an educator in Poland. We had a long talk the other day, and I told her how wonderful she was. She says, yeah, but I'm just a waitress. That was her ego, unfortunately, responding to her condition. But I just saw this beautiful being, truly beautiful being, who needed to be celebrated and was having a hard time being celebrated, but not completely, because she was very loving. She came over and acknowledged that there's somebody who saw her and cared about her. We can do that for each other. We really need to do that for each other. You need to speak out. When there's somebody around you who you see doing the right thing, just go, beautiful, man. Beautiful. Well done. Whatever it is, it's heard. It's recognized. It's shared. It's the larger self dialoguing with the lower self in each person, or the two selves, higher selves, connecting and going, right, wow, yeah, right. Life can be so simple and so beautiful, and we're living in very complicated times with massive egos running the show. But, you know, I was in Russia, Moscow, 2 days ago. You know, a country driven by massive ego-minded beings. I mean, massive, from czars to, you know, dictators. I mean, the most powerful people running countries and doing awful things in the name of the whatever, of wealth and prestige and power, or just in the names of the people, which is almost worse, you know, killing millions of people so other people can get a lot more money. It's, I mean, just horrible things that go on in the world. You don't want to live in that ego-minded state. You don't want to. And while you're in that state, you look around for tiny moments, and every so often you would see somebody on the subway giving somebody a seat. Not often, but you saw little moments of just genuine kindness. And that is all, that's what we need. And if we all took charge of that little bit of expression of acknowledgement to other, compassion for others, kindness, love, we're serving this great, great energy that has poured itself into us. If you do that, when it's time to go back into that space, you will be greeted warmly. And if you're not greeted warmly, you will not be happy. Because not being greeted warmly by yourself is the worst thing that could happen. It's, you know, it's your biggest fear, really. Being rejected by yourself, by the self. And it doesn't ultimately do that, but the ego mind that gets so locked into and constructed in its own dark space cannot see the love at all. It cannot feel the love. It doesn't know that it is being embraced by love. It feels cut off, it feels self-absorbed, it feels caught in its own inner dimension, and it is unaware of the surrounding and the embrace that's coming for it. That's real suffering. And if you want to go to real suffering, live your ego life to the hilt. If you want to go to something called liberation and joy, care about others. Listen to yourself. Be a gentle ego. Don't try to promote yourself to the world. The world doesn't care. It only wants to have an ego like you do, a bigger ego than you do, really. Let yourself be gentle and kind and easy, and the ego will start to become less and less demanding. It will start to let go. At some point, it will really start to disintegrate on some level, and you will start to be free of all of this stuff that has never had much purpose other than getting you through the day. And you start to become a pure expression of your highest self. And every one of you is on that path. Stay on that path. Don't worry about your ego. It's not your enemy. In a way, it's your friend, but don't give it more power than it deserves. Any questions? I knew we shouldn't have taken that walk before everybody is so wiped out. But thank you guys. I keep getting these cramps. Thank you guys for showing up for two classes today. I really appreciate it. And you know, we'll meet again tomorrow for those of you who are here. And
I had a quick question about the surrendering and resistance when it comes to like physical pain or a chronic illness. Like, how do you navigate between those two things? Surrender and resistance. And
it's really hard. I mean, the best voice on all of that is Eckhart Tolle, who talks about the pain body. And the pain body is a body that our mind constructs around an event. You know, there is pain, and then there's me who has pain. You don't have to be a me that has pain. There's just pain. Pain is interesting. It really can really rob you of all your comfort. It can be a complete attention grabber on some level. But if you really can breathe into it and around it, you will start to make yourself a little bit bigger than the pain itself. You create a little bit of a cocoon around it. And that little bit of a cocoon can free you. Not free you completely. There are pain that are really There are pains that I think some people just can't endure, and I'm not sure I'm able to speak to that. You know, but we have a society of opioids, you know, that create all sorts of opportunities to get rid of pain. I think the spiritual dimension of that is really important. Learning deeply inside how I can dialogue with, reference pain, become bigger than my pain. And I have found many times I'm able to incorporated in a way. I can step back and see it and not get caught. But when it's really bad, you know, I get miserable. I really get miserable, and I think so do most people. And you know, what to say about it? One of the great non-dualistic teachers, Nisargadatta Maharaj, was a tobacco shop owner, and he smoked all the time. And at the end of his life, he had chronic cancer, lung cancer, and he was miserable. And he was a great attainer in spiritual terms, but he suffered and was angry that he got born at all because it was so painful. At some point in life, we are going to have pain that we cannot surmount. And, you know, the journey out of this world is going to be, for most of us, pretty uncomfortable. My reference point for this, and I've said it many times, so many of you have heard it, is Christ on the cross. And Christ hanging on the cross is asking his Father who art in heaven, why have you forsaken me? He is getting no peace, no release from the pain. He is in pretty bad shape, you know, probably pretty traumatized by it all. And then something shifts, not documented in the teachings, but it's a really interesting shift because it's very simple. The next line is, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." He has gone from his own personal suffering into an act of cosmic forgiveness for others. How did he make that shift? What is the thing that took place that allowed him not to be about himself and his pain and his suffering, but to be about others? What was that? That's the journey we're on, trying to find that thing that releases us from our own particular self-involvement, even when we have good reason to be self-involved, like pain that won't emerge, won't go away. What is that? Where does that go? It's a tricky one. There are lots of places to go for pain relief if you can find them. You know, I mean, now those of us who live in California have marijuana groves. You know, to help release pain. You have different choices of things one can do. You know, try it. Try what you can do. But the spiritual journey, ultimately will give you perspective no matter what choice you make, and that's important. But it's the big ultimate test of spiritual development. How do I transcend my own agony? I can't give you the bitter or the magic pill. You know, again, Eckhart's idea of pain body and going beyond pain body sounds great up to the point where the pain is unendurable. Then what? I don't know.
Bruce, may I add to this?
Were you done?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But we also can seek help and ask the universe to help us. And sometimes help comes in the most unpredictable way.
Yes, I mean, that's very true. I mean, I don't think there's a one shoe fits all, or, you know, there's asking for help is at the core of the teaching that we're working with. Help is something everybody doesn't tend to ask for, but it really is available. The universe may be more available in terms of help than any of us understand, and I sometimes postulate that the universe exists primarily to help us. That's its primary function. So yes, you can ask for help. I mean, at some point there is pain relief until there isn't. And when there isn't pain relief, you go into whatever dance you go into. I just think, I've told this before, I mean, I'm terrible on boats, you know, I get seasick very easily. And I was throwing up at the edge of a boat. And I couldn't imagine being on the boat for one more minute. And somebody came over to me and just put their arm around me. That's all they did. And it took over. I was relieved. That's all. It was so simple. I felt cared for, comforted. And I just didn't, I was able to get through the rest of the boat trip. And it's little things like that that really help. That somebody saw that I was in distress and they comforted me. Comforting, you know, big, beautiful word. We can do that for one another and we can ask to be comforted. Maybe not a specific person, because sometimes people don't like to be asked to be, you know, but you can say, please help me, to the universal listener, if you want to call it that which hears us, because there is something that hears us, and watch and see what happens. And if nothing comes, you've got work to do. You know? I mean, that's really the way it is. And again, in the worst of situations, the very structure that we're trying to promote, the mind-body persona, doesn't last. It will get destroyed, and we will have to observe its destruction, and most likely it will be uncomfortable, either physically uncomfortable or mentally and emotionally uncomfortable. And if you haven't gotten a process inside that can go, thy will be done, and hand it over to something bigger, you're gonna be going through a big dance at that point of, what's this all about? I mean, to ask the questions of the universe, like why, what, how, at the last moments of your life is not a great dance to be doing. Mm-hmm. But it's what happens for many people because they never asked. And this is the time now. Come to a place where When the journey is at an end, you can say, "Thy will be done. Unto your hands I commit my spirit."
Maybe the question was or spoke to me about resistance and pain, and kind of my question earlier about duality. I seem to have a lot of resistance in many things, maybe a little less now with meditation. But so the resistance almost has a mind of its own, and pain can be one of those. But aside from pain, can you talk to the duality of resistance and wanting to move forward?
The important thing is to see who and what is bringing up resistance. Where does resistance come from? You know, it's a direct line to ego. You know, resistance is a thing that doesn't want to be bothered, that doesn't want to have to be demanded of. It's something that is fearful. It's got all these negatives around it. Resistance is really where much of our unhappiness comes from. And if we can just stop for a moment and look at the thing which is resisting, excuse me, you will start to see the very thing that needs to be most worked on in your life, which is this separated ego that feels it should have life other than the way it's been delivered, other than the way it is. And the thing that wants it to be other than the way it is a source of great suffering, because it isn't other than the way it is, it is the way it is. And unless you can begin to go okay to that, this is how it is, or unless you can begin to make certain changes in your life that will make life better, like go to the gym, eat differently, be nice to people, whatever those things are, unless you can begin to make those kinds of choices, the resistance will be there as a kind of obstruction, as a kind of egotism that is trying to defend its laziness, its inertia, its anger, all of that stuff. That's all resistance. And resistance disappears when you start to turn your ego into an ally to get through life in a better way. When your ego says, "I'm going to Weight Watchers." When your ego says, I'm going to work out for an hour every day. When your ego starts to do that, trust me, it changes the dynamic. The resistance is overcome by effort that something in you embraced. That's ego from negative resistor into positive thrust supporter. And that's the kind of thing that allows for growth, opening, transformation, and happiness ultimately. And that's really kind of what we're here to try to get ourselves to do, to get past the resisting factor of ego, the ego as enemy of the state, ego as enemy of the persona. You know, you don't want to live in that space because it's so painful and it's stupid, but it's a place of inertia, anger, envy, jealousy, all that stuff. That's the ego that is fighting the what is. And the what is there's nothing you can do about it but accept it. Learning to accept what is what is transformational in people. Learning to accept that I am 40 pounds overweight. That's, once you accept it, then you go, well, okay, now I can do something about it. But saying, "I'm 40 pounds overweight, give me some more ice cream, please," you know, that isn't going to do it. It's going to make it worse, and you're going to get to a much more unhappy place. So investing in an ego-minded nature that will be supportive of your development rather than contrary to it is very important. And you know, I know you're looking at your life now through a much higher lens, let's say, a much clearer lens. That clearer lens is going to be very directive and instructive. And you will either pay attention to it or you won't. You have a choice. That's what Rudy always said, the great thing about spiritual practice and upliftment and higher vision is you have a choice. I can do something or not do something, but you have to own that choice. You have to own, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't care if I'm overweight. I don't care. You know, I'm going to live with the person I am. I'm going to be who I am. It's fine. Just own it. Be it. Be the person you feel good about. Be the person you want to be. Be friends with yourself. That's really valuable. It's when you're not friends with yourself that resistance and anger and hostility to the self becomes really self-destructive and problematic.
I really love the talk you just did on the ego, because, yeah, I tend to fight myself, right? So that was a really beautiful thing. But because I've had so much of it, I think sometimes, like, the duality of it, I think, like, devil or something. I don't believe in a devil, but for instance, something like, does it come from a higher place also, from, you know, is it sparked by...
You don't want to start that discussion with me. There is a dark side to all of us, and it can be magnified into demonic, devil, good, evil aspect. And I have definitely dealt with that in my practice, and there's a lot of talks back when I was dealing with it in a big way, where it was very prominent, where there were these really dark forces in my life. And as I may have acknowledged, when you may have heard these, there was one time when these dark forces of ego-mindedness, which is not really that, it's more Shiva-like, it's destructive energy coming in to destroy ego mostly, but it has a really dark presence. And I started singing to it. And so those of you who've heard this 1,000 times, I'm sorry, but I started going, "Hello darkness, my old friend, I'm here to talk to you again." And it was so stunned by my singing that it didn't know what to do, and I befriended the darkness. I let it out of its cage or out of its basement, and it came back into my life as a real force. And it did exactly what darkness does and exactly what a scorpion does that's riding on your back across the water. It stings. Of course it stings. I'm a scorpion. I'm darkness. I destroy. It comes in and it destroys stuff, but everything it destroys frees you. It frees you from your stuff. It's a strange bargain, but after a while you realize in a non-dualistic sense that light and dark are all working in the same place for the same goal. It's all one thing. It's not two things. That's all liberating once you free yourself of fearing the dark and embracing the other. It's all one thing. You have to open to the totality. But again, it's a really big discussion. Not this is just the tip of an iceberg. Anybody else?
Outside, you were saying that describing the people in Russia as being dour, and yet Blanche mentioned earlier to me that your movie Ghost was amazingly popular. So to me, that's like something. It's like undercover. It's interesting to me.
Well, I was surprised that Ghost was popular in London, in Russia, in Moscow particularly. I was surprised because I didn't know it had even played there, let alone been a big hit, and that people from 30 years ago and kids today all knew it and loved it. That was really a big deal for me. And I watched them with the musical, and they were laughing and crying in such profusion. It was so big and so beautiful, and I was so moved by that. But they wanted to laugh, and they wanted to cry, and they wanted to bring this stuff out. Because, I mean, I've spent 7 days in Russia, so don't imagine, I don't know Russia. But I was riding the subways, and I was talking to a lot of people, and I saw people whose lives had been powerfully impacted by history, over and over and over, in ways we in America barely understand. Really dark forces manipulating their lives, and continuing to manipulate their lives, and a lot of unhappiness results from that. And if you ride on the subway, I'm not the only person to observe this, you see no one smiling. They're just, it's heavy. Lives are heavy for many, many people. Maybe in our country too now, more so than perhaps before. A lot of displaced people, a lot of people being affected by the changes in society and in economics, there's so many different things. A lot of unhappy people. One of the great things about entertainment is that it gives you 2 hours out of that. It lifts you up and takes you out. My parents during the war went to see every Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers movie available. They needed those movies. I mean, they needed them. The lines around the block to go see movies that lifted you up were so important. And that's the external version of this. The internal version is go inside and find Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers within. They are within. There is a dancing going on inside your body, inside your mind, that is more entertaining than anything on the outside, but it's not as easily accessed. It's easier to go turn on a television or go to a movie than to do this thing inside. But you can do both. It's not like one or the other. It's all available. The world is available to us. Giving people the gift of laughter, the gift of emotion, the gift of seeing other people's stories is incredible because it relieves us of our own story for a minute. And it lifts us up often, sometimes takes us down, but even down sometimes is good because you learn from down. And it gives us another world view, which is really important. I loved my experience in Russia. I loved hearing people laugh and seeing them cry, you know, at my words. They turned out that I wrote this for an American audience, I thought, but people in Russia and China and, I mean, you know, everywhere now, I mean, all Korea, I was, and all these people find the same language, the language of love, this idea that love, the last line of the movie and the last line of the play is the love inside, you take it with you. I cannot emphasize enough how important this idea of love, the shape of God, is for all of us. It's universal. I don't care what society you live in, what dominating forces are around you, we know that. We all know it. And it was very powerful to uncover in Russia. Okay. Okay. Tomorrow?
Just one more thing. Oh. I just have to add this for everybody who's worried about the pain and suffering when you're going or up. But anyway, I know two people, but one person who passed, she was meditating. She went and meditated. Her husband found her like after the hour. She didn't show up, and there she was.
While she was meditating?
While she was meditating.
Rudy always said that there was no better way to go.
Her family was devastated. She was only 60.
Wow.
But what a way to go.
Yeah.
Happy, healthy day.
Wow. And on that happy note, thank you, and we will convene
something
tomorrow.
Something to look forward to.
Yes. I have always thought that's how I want to go. I want to be just sitting. Okay.
They say if you visualize how you want to go, and I just figured sleep is easier.
Well, I like sitting up. I like being. I want to watch it as it occurs. That's my feeling. I want to be present for that departure. Anyway, thank you again, and more tomorrow.